gentlemen, I hope you're feeling good about this. Welcome to the Corn Tigers. This is our you know, bi-weekly, semi-monthly. I'm not sure how the schedule works out, but it's a conversation among friends, you know, about all things audio. Occasionally we'll talk about big cats. What's that now?
Acquaintances.
Oh, we've downgraded. Oh, we're content creators at the very least. Welcome. I am your temporary host until I'm suspended indefinitely. My name is Dan Hurt, and I am joined, as always, by two of the best-looking gentlemen on this podcast, one of them being Craig Laporte. Craig, welcome.
Oh, thanks, Dan. I think you're good-looking, too.
My gosh. Isn't this just a love fest? And, of course, the third in, if you're ranking them, Ty Roberts. How are you, sir?
I'm okay. How are you guys?
Yeah, doing pretty good.
We've both already answered that question already, yeah. So we know Ty's not paying attention.
Everybody knows how we are, but it's good to reiterate. This is the important thing. Well, welcome, guys. This is, you know, last time we talked about, we were excited. We still are excited to talk about the Corn Tigers. Tiger King series. It's back. You guys know that. You probably already watched it all. We're not going to talk about everything. We're going to talk about episodes 2 and 3 a little bit tonight. And who knows what else we're going to talk about? Are we going to do kind of a loosey-goosey, whatever we're watching, whatever we're playing or reading or listening? Are we doing that? Do you guys want to do that?
Yeah, we can do all that.
Who knows? You know what? Just stick around. Some vigorous conversation is in store, no doubt. You guys both watch this. Ty, you watched this the furthest in time from right now. You were the first one to clear out the season. You still remember?
Yeah, I did make a slight effort today. And I rewatched some of episode 2 while I was trying to get everything together. So
nice.
Nothing is too good for our listeners. Just as long as it's a slight effort.
yeah. The slightest stuff. Yeah. Just to jog my memory.
Craig, how many viewthroughs did you do?
Ty confirmed it is still available on Netflix if anybody else wants to watch it.
Yeah, it's not in the top 10 though anymore. I did. I had a second look at that. It's gone.
Oh, nice.
Did you see what was in the top 10?
Nothing I was interested in. It's not unusual on Netflix nowadays.
Netflix.
Well, it's just time to watch The Office again for the 50th time.
You know what's hilarious? So I'm watching this to not mess with kind of the algo on our regular account. I'm watching this on our guest account. And this is like the only thing I've watched on our guest account.
wait. I know you had a point there, but I'm not there yet.
Listeners, let me assure you that no one in your life goes to the extents as Daniel Hurt does to try to fuck with his algo.
But wait a minute.
And just make sure.
What is, are you just trying to, so is the point you don't like Tiger King and you don't want it influencing Netflix's picks, or is it more something else? Is it deeper than that?
It's more if I were to watch with Jess. I don't want to mess up the sequence or like stop or you know, go back. Or if she's watching, then I don't want us both watching the same account at the same time, sort of thing. You know how Netflix isn't excited about that, right? So
I think you're onto something there, because I could use the algo not looking at so many cooking shows and things like that.
Do a guest account.
I am shocked that you guys don't have. We have individual accounts for me, my wife, and our children.
Seriously?
Well, I have kids. Well, I only have one child. So
we do that with bank accounts here. I don't want my finances tied up with that chick.
We actually do that with bank accounts as well.
Well, this is fun territory we've gotten into. So,
shall we check some boxes?
Yeah, let's check some boxes. And let's start with everybody's favorite box to check. Jeez mail.
Oh, my God.
Jeez mail.
What's the good word on the wire, Craiger?
No emails, but our social media account is going gangbusters. Feel free to check out our posts.
Well, I want you
to be more. Try to be more active lately on the old Insta, on the Insta machine.
Are there no emails, or have you forgotten?
No, I just checked it. I had to reset the password.
Legit. Not even legitimately from our friends at Microsoft. Nothing.
Yeah, no. There's a bunch from Google. Did you know that YouTube updated their terms of service?
Oh yeah,
we can cover. I think they do that every week. We can cover it if you want. I'll pull up the email.
They do that every week.
I already used that. I already used that joke back in season 1. My most recent post was a picture of the a challenge the audience to give us their best ideas for who ate the chicken that was found in on Don Lewis's property. But no takers on that. I guess it was just too tough of a question.
Really?
You know, well, so maybe we'll be able to sort it out today.
Okay, was that in episode one? I'm getting a little fuzzy now. Was that episode one?
That was episode three.
Yeah, okay. So
hey guys, think about it, because we're going to be talking about it soon. Gotcha. And sure, that was a week ago, but this is soon for us because we're slow.
It's soon adjacent.
Yeah.
You know how it is.
You're really into that chicken.
Episode two of season two of Tiger King is titled The Carol Diaries. And unless there's other things that we need to address, any listener mail, any call-in requests, are we still taking requests? Anything else to address box-wise?
Box-wise, do either of you gentlemen have any escalators that you want to discuss from previous episodes?
I think
I'm just glad it's behind us.
Yeah.
So we can move on.
And with that slight effort that you put into this, we should keep moving this thing forward. So this episode was called The Carol Diaries, and it opens up. It opens up with Carol's ex-boyfriend. And who doesn't love somebody's ex-boyfriend stumbling around for 3 minutes, not really providing much in the way...
Hey, Alan is probably one of the nicest, most normal guys we've met on this entire show.
Yeah, but he's not adding anything to it.
He's adding the presence of a normal human being, and I was cool with him.
I did make a comment to... I think I made a comment to Ty. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I thought it was so refreshing after watching these two episodes to take a break from the GW Zoo crew to really just kind of like go down the missing persons aspect of this instead of the insane personality aspect. You still get some flavor, right? But it was just so bonkers that this was like a palate cleanser, these couple episodes for me.
Yeah. My favorite thing about Alan specifically is the story he tells about how he met Carol online early on in online dating back in the late 90s. And she says, Carol tells him, check me out in People magazine, like as kind of a flex, not mentioning it's a story about me potentially killing my ex-husband. And she was like, this is going to score me a date. And it did. So, you know, maybe Alan wasn't so normal. But, it's a weird icebreaker. Yeah.
His son's reaction to her as well also points in the direction of maybe he's not so normal. Yeah.
Dad, what the fuck?
And he did seem very eager to identify himself as Tiger King adjacent at the golf course when he was introduced as well, which also is a red
flag. That's why they were there. We don't know that this is what
but
Alan does.
I also didn't like that he told the golfer that maybe she did it, but then privately in his interview, he's like, I don't think she did it. I think she knows. You know what I mean? So I just found that like very, I don't know, man. You get famous and adjacent.
We're out on Alan, it sounds like, which is fine because I'm pretty sure he's coming from the story. Anyway.
I'm just saying, you got to watch out for these guys.
Dan, to touch on your point about these being very much outside of the old GW Zoo crew, I think that would have to be the case since that's probably closed now. But I mean, maybe we'll see more later with Jeff Lowe's crew. We don't know what's coming in the last episodes. But I know Ty does, but we don't. I thought that these two episodes specifically were demonstrating to me how much of a money grab this season is. And it kind of proved to me Ty's point that they've just got this set up to just keep throwing more tidbits and call it an episode. Because these two episodes to me, Bounty Hunting being episode three and The Carol Diaries episode two. Episode two is framed as the case for Don Lewis disappearing. And episode three is the case for Carol killing Don Lewis. And it's like these two can kind of seemingly exist independently of each other and just be watched on their own. And you'd be like, okay, I think I understand what they're going for with this. But they're just kind of picking these topics now and let's ram it in the ground for 40 minutes and then we'll move on, even if they're conflicting ideas.
Yeah, you know what? So kind of going back to something I said in the kickoff episode for this season's Tiger King, you know, it's like you take a thing from 2020 and you shove it down its own throat with the insanity of 2020's internet. And this is what you get, right? And that's why Alan, it's like, well, what are we talking to Alan for? Because they had this, they're looking for a kind of not a cash grab. People are still being entertained, right? So, and I struggle with this sometimes. It's like, how much is it important that the entertainment's supposed to be meaningful and important? Or should it just be entertaining? Like if I can just watch a bouncing ball and I'm happy with that, maybe I'm happy, you know? Like, this is
something that occurred to me this time that didn't occur to me when we spoke last time is this has been filmed entirely over the quarantine pandemic situation that's been going on, which, you know, when you have a closed set and everyone's individually tested and everyone knows where everyone is, and it's, you know, you see the same 20 people on a show every day, that's a different situation than going out and interviewing people and all. So, you know, there may be some difficulties at periods of time when they were filming that have to do with the pandemic that I didn't really consider as far as what the style of it looks like. It's probably not what they had in mind ideally is what I'm thinking. But I do think, you know, the plan is to keep going forward with crazy cat people for as long as they possibly can and trying to bring in the new stock, a little bit of new stock every season. I still think that's what they're going for. But I think they probably had some difficulties this time.
For the episode Carol's Diaries, did you guys feel like you learned anything new?
Well, I mean, we learned that Don was alive and went to Costa Rica, right?
A lot more picture of what he was up to potentially over there and some really sick stuff. And yeah, you know, what a surprise. The guy that picked up a blonde crying on the side of a road and ended up marrying her. What a surprise that he turned out to be a creep.
Slept with her like the same night, I think it was.
Yeah, I think so.
Gross story about that. We learned that Don Lewis was a piece of shit, if we didn't already know that.
You're saying this just because he was into 15-year-old girls? Is that that's the line for you? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Okay. Child molestation tends to not go over well in this part of the world.
We don't know what the age of consent
is. Be careful how you frame these questions, Dan. You could be...
Why? What do you mean?
Personality could be misconstrued.
Yeah, I love that I can't say but Dan can ask me if molesting...
Do you want to mark a timestamp down, Ty?
What's the timestamp? 24:50.
And also I think this was the one where I was like, okay, I get what Ty is saying. We nailed a bunch of this stuff. We nailed him moving his money down to Costa Rica. They talk about him landing at like the banana plantation airports along the way under the radar, pay somebody $1,000 to keep your name off the books. These are almost line for line predictions that we made. I went and listened back in season one. I've re-listened to all of our season one podcasts at this point after Ty raised the point that we nailed a bunch of stuff. And so far he's right. Those were kind of the three specific ones. We called the method that he used to get his money down there and the method that he's said to have used to get himself down there without being on anybody's books. And that's pretty significant. Although I will say at the end of the episode where it was time to say, did Carol kill Don or is he gone? You guys both voted that Carol killed him, and I predicted that he was alive and well in Costa Rica. So I'm obviously a better person than you guys are.
Well, why do you think that after watching episode 2 and 3 that it's in the bag that she had nothing to do with it?
100% I do. 100% I do not think that it was Carol. I think that he left. Here's the thing. I think Don Lewis is dead, but I think it's more based on the shit that he was doing in Central America than anything that happened at...
Well, here's the problem, man. Like, this is a framing thing, right? Like, you can watch episode 2. After episode 2, I thought exactly what you're thinking. But after episode 3 and maybe later when they go through what happened that evening where she was...
Yes, that's episode 3.
You know, there's something wrong there.
Oh, it's a shifty night. I agree. She does not do a good job, and I don't mind talking about these both simultaneously.
What are they hiding about that night? That if, especially if he's killed somewhere, you know, not in the United States, what the hell are they hiding? And what the hell is she doing? Like, you know, it seems to me like that whatever we see last, and there's plenty of circumstantial evidence for everything, for any theory. And so the hard evidence is what's missing, right? So it's totally possible that he could have died somewhere in, where was he going again?
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica. It's totally possible that her and her brother were involved. But I think, you know, again, I think we see 10% of the picture sometimes with these things, and some things are points are embellished. And then, you know, we can put together a 1 hour episode that convinces almost anything for anybody. It's just, that's why I hate watching this so much, is because you can have such a confident opinion about something after one episode, then we're on to the next one, totally changes the perspective. And now things don't look right. and you just never feel like you know what's happening. Yeah.
A significant portion of my confidence is based on the disclosure of the Homeland Security document. That says that he's been found, that it's Don's lawyer who finds it. You know what I mean? Like, right. He doesn't have a stake in the game for having this man declared alive or dead at this point.
But I think that document...
He has this guy give it to him. And I would assume it's been verified at this point because it's being presented all over the place. I have a copy of it downloaded. I could read you the whole document if you want right now.
The Homeland Security letter?
It's even got some redacted portions on it, yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
When did this document appear?
There's no date on the one that I have.
Because the first thing I thought when I saw it was, is this pre-Tiger King season one or season one?
This is, they investigated after the, it says in the letter that they investigated after the claim was made, after the, I'm using the wrong term, the missing person report was filed by the wife. Mm. They did some investigation because there was some international aspect to this with them flying over borders and yada yada. And they found him to be alive and well in Costa Rica. And so they were closing their investigation as the end of the
I just have such a hard time wrapping my brain around why Homeland Security is looking for this clown.
But what is their benefit to saying he's alive down in Costa Rica if he's not? Like, no, why is like, that need to be no, an official
I just
document?
Don't...
To me, that's too far down the rabbit hole for me to be able to leap
and
disbelieve it.
I think Don Lewis is... I think the lawyer and the Tiger King, the show, I don't know. When I see something like that pop up on the screen, I just don't... You know, I wouldn't bet the farm that that's a legit document, but whatever. Maybe it is. I don't know. It just seems like there was a lot of people... intentionally looking away from Carol. I'm not convinced she did it. I'm just saying I wouldn't write that off either because there's no question that night something was going down.
Yeah, the details of that night are pretty crazy.
Okay, so you know our boy John Rinke?
Yeah.
Love him.
In his little message. Friend of the pod, John Rinke, in his message to us, and again, thank you, mystery listener. Whoever that may have been, we do appreciate that. But he says explicitly, it wasn't me. He says explicitly in there, Carol did it, right? And, you know, he was smiling at the camera and he says that a lot. So that would seem like he's got some sort of legal liability when you say a thing like that. But is Carol a public figure so you could say just about anything and not slander her? You know, like
she is at this point. She's on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, I guess that makes her a public figure, right?
Yeah, I hope it was worth it, Carol.
Because people could just accuse you of shit left and right. I mean,
so it's funny. You're on one episode of Dancing with the Stars.
Boom.
And now I can say whatever I want about you.
Well, of course. I don't know. It's weird. It's weird, man.
What are your thoughts on her posting all of her diaries on YouTube?
Okay. I'm an attention whore. You guys know this. This is not a secret. It's not a secret at all. To society. If you've interacted with me, you know my deal, right? Carol and Joe, two peas in a fucking pod, like, I cannot believe how much she wants to put herself in front of a camera saying things. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, some of that stuff was the most disgusting. Like, she's reading on YouTube diary entries about sex.
Hold on. I'm really glad that you brought up that specific entry.
I'm not.
In my own investigative reporting on this particular episode, for the second time, I have unearthed the Corn Tigers exclusive here.
Oh, no.
I have the unreleased next verse to Carol's love poem.
Can we get the first?
She wrote about Alan.
The preceding verse?
No, the following verse after.
So we only get the following verse. Okay.
I'm going to read her verse, and then I will read the spot that... she deemed too hot for YouTube, or maybe YouTube cut it because it was just too racy.
You think so?
So here we go.
Community guideline sort of thing.
Possibly. Hang on to something.
I'm sorry, Dan. I'm not, I don't do voice work. Maybe I should have farmed this out to you, but he pulls me close. I feel him breathe hot upon my shivering skin.
Close your eyes, folks.
Web around me weaved as I become one flesh with him. He feels the lust within my gaze. Our lips crash with each kiss. To the heavens we ascend as he devours my soggy blobfish.
Where's Alan Alden?
She didn't write that. I don't think she wrote that. You're making that up.
It says blobfish, and that was from season one.
Bit alert.
I remember that. If you don't recall that, should we give some context? Is the Carol's callback here? Because Carol's calling back to season one now with this.
Yes, she was. I think Joe Exotic referred to her vagina as a blobfish.
Yeah.
And I think that she's just embraced that in this diary entry.
Do you guys remember Harold talk or Howard? Howard, right? Harold?
He did that all season one too. You called me wrong then.
Do you remember his response to this? He was like, I don't even know what a blobfish is. Like, I don't know. It's a fish. Where is it?
A little too defensive. So, yeah.
Yeah, really? It's like, good God. Don't give it any air.
He knows what a blobfish is, and he doesn't give it any air, if you know what I'm talking about.
Was it the end of episode three? Was it the end of episode? I can't remember. There was an end of one of these episodes from the new season where Harold puts on a do-rag.
That was episode three, I think.
It was episode three.
And he does his Jeff Lowe impression.
He does a Jeff
Lowe. And listen, it was incredible.
Yeah, incredible. You have to give him props on that.
It was something. Carol, she was in stitches. She was just, oh my gosh. It was cute. It was like watching a couple 16-year-old kids in love just waiting to just go to town on a blobfish. That's kind of what it reminded me of.
I had a minor revelation today. I don't know why I didn't have this earlier, but you know, I am kind of on team Carol's semi-responsible, at least for what happened. And today I think I realized my deep-seated mistrust for her might go back to a girlfriend I had in university.
Oh, let's work this out. Go ahead.
Here we are.
Who was a cat person. The only cat person I ever dated in my career. I don't know about how you gentlemen.
Career?
If you have any cat people.
You don't have to name her, but give us her middle name and last name.
I don't think either of you met or know who I'm talking about. So, you know, I kind of like to joke around. I was trying to make this girl laugh from time to time. And on rare occasion, she would laugh at something right when I hit the punchline, right? Yeah. And then I would realize immediately that she was actually laughing at something a cat was doing right behind me.
Oh, come on.
I realized, I think I dated her for, I want to say 4 or 5 months. And I realized the only time I had ever seen her express laughter or thought something was funny, it was directly tied to a cat. And that kind of brought home to me that feeling again when they were talking about all Carol cares about is cats. And I think that was her boyfriend from previous, right? Or maybe the boyfriend's son.
The son.
That said that. And I thought, I know somebody like that. And it's like you're dealing with a psychopath most of the time. But those flashes of humanity are only coming into the forefront when there's a cat around. And I thought, oh, wow, okay. And this is kind of the vibe I get from Carol is, you know, God help me, I could have been with something like that for the rest of my life.
How did you end that? How did you end that relationship?
Well, quickly. Once I realized, when I came to that realization and I realized, okay, now I get this chick. Once you saw it, it was all you could see is, well, okay, every time this chick's laughing, I look for the cat in the room. And so we were outside the music department, which she was a part of. Surprise, surprise.
Where was this? At University of Windsor?
Yeah. Okay. There's a music building across the other side of Wyandotte. And I just couldn't wait. I was getting anxiety about it. I'm like, I have to just cut this off. So I was going to meet her there.
Butter and dog.
No. We're at the corner waiting for a green light. And I told her, listen, I can't remember specifically what I said, but I said, that's it. I think we're, you know, I don't really think we like the same things. And I was just trying to come up with a neutral way of saying, I don't like cats. And that seems to be all you're into. That's so funny. So, she started tearing up, which is the only other time I saw her get emotional the entire time. Any emotion whatsoever. That was the only other time. So I felt bad, but I also felt free. So I just crossed the street and that was it.
I also felt free and the little guy was blinking. So I crossed the street.
I only got 10 seconds left to cross the street. Anyway, see you later.
You stay here.
And because she spent most of her time in that building, I didn't have to bump into her over and over again. So it was quite
that's
convenient.
A big win.
Yeah.
Here's a weird question. Did you consider at any point taking this hilarious cat with you when you left? Because you guys were obviously very in sync comedically. It could have been.
I was thinking about the cats. I was trying to remember the specifics about the cats, and I don't even remember. Like, here's how little I cared about the cats. I didn't even know if there were. I think there might have been more than one, but I can't remember.
Ty's like making angry eye contact them while he's doing. While he's, you know,
I she also liked music, moments. I guess. But she like there was. Have you guys heard of Great Big Sea?
Yes. Well, yeah.
That was the only other thing I remember her talking
East Coast
about.
Stuff.
Great Big Sea and cats.
And I. We just, had a from Nova Scotia or something. What's going on? She was. You're laughing.
No, I don't. I don't know. But it's a strong possibility. I'm not sure.
We had a friend in from Detroit last weekend, and the one song, you know, "Home for a Rest," I think, is the big Great Big Sea song, or the one that made it like really big. And it came on whatever we were listening to, and me and Jess started bobbing our heads to it. And she's like, "What the hell are you guys doing? What is this? I'm like, how do you not know this?" I feel like if you're in Michigan, there should be some Great Big Sea. Like, I feel like it could have made it over the border there. No. You guys don't think? I thought Great Big Sea would have just been big.
No, the only reason couple songs. You know Great Big Sea is because of Canadian content loss.
God bless.
Another win for Canadian content loss.
That's why we're so big on Spotify these days, guys.
The algo's pushing us. Yeah.
Hey, we
thank
got
you,
our Spotify
thank you,
results.
Spotify, for that
for
plus
lack
105%
of anything else,
audience.
Yeah. We found out today that there are 5 listeners out there somewhere who the Quarantigers was their number one ranked podcast for last year. Yeah. And whoever you people are, get a fucking
And I
life.
Told you guys a couple weeks ago, I don't use Spotify to listen to our own show. So it's
oh,
not
yeah,
me.
I don't either. I never have. I always use Google Podcasts.
Yeah, which if you're a Google Podcast listener, we apologize for the feet photo that you'll be looking at indefinitely. It sounds
no,
like.
I fixed it. I took
oh,
it
you? Oh, really?
This is a good story. We've stopped talking about Tiger King for a minute, but this is worth it. Ty had a listener friend who let him know that they were upset by the sight of my feet on our thumbnail image.
To be fair,
and
this guy, I ought to be clear. He's a friend of mine. I went to high school with him, but I talk to him like once every 2 years. He just comes out of the woodwork. We talk to each other for like a couple of days, update each other on some stuff, and then I don't hear from him again. So he came into the picture for this, you know, alignment of the planets period of time, and then this is what he, Craig, go ahead. This is the thing he wanted to talk to.
He chose to mention. He said, "Listen, I really want to listen to that last episode that you told me I should hear, and I've been trying. But every time I look at my phone, all I can see is that guy's feet, and they gross me out so much that I shut it off." So what I did then was I copied and pasted my feet onto Dan as well, who was wearing shoes, only I made them bigger, so there was double the amount of feet. And I had told Ty to tell his friend that unless he's going to Photoshop a specific pair of Jordans I named for some reason onto that and send it back to me, I will increase the size of the feet every week as a ransom. And I did it once. And then I was Ty told me a follow-up story where this gentleman, his friend from high school, years ago, also made mention of his legitimate, I don't know if I want to call it a phobia, but a significant dislike of feet. And like, oh, I'm legitimately fucking with somebody here. So I just reverted it back to the old one just a couple of days ago. He's probably gone.
I can't recall the name of it, but it is he did refer to it as a phobia. He once, years ago, he was on my Facebook when I had a Facebook, and I had a photo, a profile photo once where my boy was like 2 years old, and I just took a picture of his I was holding his foot up into the camera, and you could see him in the background smiling, and it's just a photo picture of a foot. And I had it up for like a few weeks, and I took it down. And then he messaged me after I took it down and said, "I'm so glad you." I didn't want to say anything while I was up, but I'm so glad you took that down. I every time I open my Facebook, and it's a little baby foot. Like I don't like feet either. I empathize with this guy. I don't like feet either, but a baby foot is not the same as an adult foot. That's cute. No. That's different. Like
I'm not that far. There's almost no miles on a baby foot.
Yeah, so they're cute.
If we can drag this back, what do we think Don Lewis thought about baby feet?
Hey, quick note on feet and phobias. Craig, I think you're actually doing him a service because the only way to get over this shit is exposure therapy. And,
you think so?
And I think you know, in your own way, you've helped him.
I tried, but listen.
No, what happened was he's never listening to the podcast again.
Probably not. More than
so he won't. He won't appreciate.
One of my favorite. My dad called me years ago. This was 20 years ago, and he can barely speak, and he's just telling me turn it on channel whatever. And the show that was on was I don't think it was it Maury or Ricky Lake. It was one of those weird old trash talk shows.
Yeah.
But it was people with strange phobias. And like one guy was afraid of pennies. So they sit him on stage and somebody walks out with a whole pizza tray loaded with pennies. And this guy fucking takes off screaming, losing his mind. And all like he's jumping through, climbing over people in the audience. Like there's a bomb about to go off or there's an active shooter. And there's just a tray of pennies on the table at the front of the thing. And he's a grown man. He's sobbing and crying and trying to get away from these pennies.
I saw that. And then they opened the trap door and he fell into a bucket of pennies.
And Scrooge McDuck was swimming with them trying to get him. No.
Is this a Japanese game show by chance? I feel like this was a legit Japanese game show.
Hold on. I'm not done yet, but I will wrap this up quickly. So the best part, immediately once I saw Penny Guy, I was like, okay, I get why my dad's losing his mind. I'm also going to watch the rest of this show. And the unanticipated thing that made this go from like a 7 out of 10 entertainment, which it was at best, to a perfect 10, was by the end of the show, they've got everyone sitting out there and they've removed their respective phobia causers, whatever they are. Like the tray of pennies had been removed, so Buddy can still sit in line while other people face their shit. But every now and again, we would learn that one of the people, say next guy's up and he's afraid of rakes. It wasn't a real one. I'm just trying to think of something. He's afraid of rakes. The lady, they sit him down. Somebody comes out with a bunch of rakes and he gets up and leaves. But unexpectedly, Penny Guy, we find out he's afraid of rakes too. And he fucking bolts. And all of a sudden, they're just scrambling over ridiculous shit. And I was just like, this is the greatest hour of television I've ever seen in my life. I wish I could remember the show and I would pull it up and it's got to be on YouTube somewhere. I would love for us to watch this. Anyway, Don Lewis, child feet we were talking about.
Okay, so Don Lewis, he did in fact go to Costa Rica. What happened to him there is still unclear. Should we bounce into the only? Okay, I guess it's kind of freeform, anyways. You know, the bounty hunter episode is it's kind of about. I think there's some paperwork stuff around Carol, right? And it has to do with some signature stuff. And forging signatures of a notary public on Don's will. So, I mean, this is maybe there's two
things.
This
was revealed back in season one. They mentioned this. Sandra Witkop was his assistant. And she makes mention in the season one episode about this topic that she says she did not sign this. So I was kind of surprised to see this presented so front and center as though this was kind of the groundbreaking basis of all this to happen. And she had to call into the tip line. It's like, I guess they didn't watch the fucking show the first time. It seemed a little odd to me, but that is not new information. But them showing those signatures overlaid, man, that was something else. My signature is not even close when I do it twice, let alone four times.
Yep, not even in the ballpark, right?
But it's funny, a signature that I thought of immediately, that every time I see it, I'm like, that looks like a photocopy. We saw a lot of Donald Trump's signature for a few years there. And that man does it exactly the same every time.
You're right. But if you overlaid them, they wouldn't be the identical length. They wouldn't be the identical height. It would look identical but it wouldn't be, you know what I mean? To do that.
I've never tried to scale them. Yeah.
Yeah. To have that actual, like the within a, you know, the same exact size of signature, let alone the pattern, is too ridiculous to, you know, that overlay was damning as far as I'm concerned. I don't know anyone who's that good at their signature.
Well, so here's the thing, though. So they present us with a bunch of evidence, and obviously, so this was filmed, you know, last year. So who, well, maybe last year, maybe earlier this year, I don't know. But who really knows what the state of affairs is? Like, I'm sure Carol could be in litigation right now about God knows what. Maybe she's in trial. Who knows? But I think it's really weird, this show being of the time, of this past year, that this Ripper Jack character, this armchair investigator... What the fuck is this guy's deal?
Is the internet in the hands of boomers. Like, where these are like the don't believe everything you read on the internet people until Ripper reads like messages his friends say, hey, maybe we should open a Facebook group. And now he works for the family? Like that was his expertise. His expertise was, hey, let's open a Facebook group.
Yep. Yep.
100%. And they said, okay, I opened a Facebook group when I worked at a store called Porter the Racist Mormon, a better kid at work who told a couple jokes because Facebook groups were hilarious at the time. And I had like 8 people from that location who joined it as a joke and then we shut it down. It doesn't mean I was the expert on Porter's racial...
Hey, you did another Facebook group. You did a Bring Dan Hurt to Facebook group. You remember that?
Yes, and you set the goal if I could get 100 people.
I think that's I think you'd have to call that a campaign. I don't think
you're right. It was part of a campaign. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dan joined and he left several years later.
Yeah, that's right.
Hashtag bring Dan back to Facebook.
No. It would take more than 100.
There's a Facebook group in our town that I live in called, it's the name of our town and then Confessions. And the shtick is there's a website off of Facebook where people are allowed to anonymously submit whatever. And then this guy posts those submissions on the anonymous Facebook thing. And it has, well, it's not good for the town, I would say. Surprisingly, it's rarely used for good.
Yeah, what are the style of posts? I'm really intrigued by this.
Oh, like, it'll be like... this south block of this street, you know, you constantly are, you know, playing music. And if you keep doing it, I'm going to not like direct. I can't post like threats or anything, but it's that kind of shit. Like, or it'll be like a popular post in like the town's like mom's group or community group. And then right immediately afterwards in the conventions, it was like that. I know that mom just spent money on this. She shouldn't be asking people for help because she just bought a fucking manicure. Like this kind of shit. Facebook needs to fucking die.
It does. It really does. Well, it did. And then it was reborn as Meta. So we're
just
all
email your goddamn pictures to your parents and just end it.
So I do think Ripper is probably the most intriguing character that we get out of that episode.
Are
Although
you
John
serious?
Phillips, the lawyer, has a lot of potential. We do see him within the episode. Is he?
I think they're in the world's smallest circle jerk, those two guys.
Oh my goodness. How has Ripper established himself so well that this family who wants a murder, potential homicide, investigated has this fucking internet clown in with their lawyer immediately?
Like, sometimes listen, he's the biggest ingredient, you know what you want off your porch more than anything is an annoying persistent guy, and
I thought
sometimes those are the only qualities you need to get answers on questions.
you're right,
something to be said for that. I mean, you know, it's a difficult job. I couldn't do it, you know. So if you're willing to pay somebody to be annoying and persistent, you might get something out of it. Maybe not, but.
Now, Ty, I want you to cut this I don't think I watched ahead, but if I did, and I'm saying this at a turn, do we see at the end of episode 3, we see John leaves the Lewis family team to join Joe Exotic's team, or is that the following episode?
No, that's episode 3.
I haven't watched. I thought maybe I watched like a few minutes ahead, maybe, yeah. and maybe that's where that was. But
you know, how so I kind of a... that. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Ty, you go.
What? I was looking away from the mic.
Okay, how crazy is it that Ripper is given to the new lawyer as a reference? Like, hey, like Ty's saying, maybe he's, hey, you got a bunch of questions. This guy spends more time on it than we do, and it's our father. So ask him. We have like, real jobs and things to do. But then at the end, they're like, sorry, lawyer. We probably don't need you. We're just going to stick with the internet guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's got to burn a bit. He probably costs less, though.
Yeah, but look, you know, keep your eyes on that lawyer, because I don't think he's that's the guy I told you from the beginning, from episode one.
That
he
guy.
Is presented as, you know, the Price is Right. What was he on that? He was on that show with Wayne Brady. What was it?
Let's Make a Deal or something? Or
Yeah. So that's an intentional bad first impression. They want, you know.
Okay.
Here's a quack. Now watch what this quack does.
He's a TV lawyer, is how he's
you know,
very
but
framed.
You know, it's as we get further in, you know, this guy gets some legwork done, and he's. I'm not saying he's not a clown, but he's a clown like with
varicose
some,
veins or
maybe some ability. So I don't know. We'll see.
Because I was actually just gonna kind of shit on both of them together as a fumbling duo, like go because ahead. they're so bizarre. Like they, I don't know. They just seem. Silly and whatever, they also seem like of the internet of the time.
Yeah, the approach is very for drama and not clearly aimed at results. It's aimed to drum up publicity. And he acknowledges right off the bat. It's like they say everything I do is a publicity stunt, and it absolutely is. I want this to be a well-known out there case, but at the same time. Are we at the stage where that's the problem? Not enough people know about Don Lewis? Like, more people know about this guy missing than most fucking people in America who are missing.
These characters, though, these guys who, you know, they're clearly willing to dedicate the time to be the bull in the china shop type of person. Mm. And I can imagine the, Joe Exotic even, but also, you know, Don Lewis's family getting to the point where that's the option that's left. So let's just try and, you know, send a, it's like when they hire when the gangsters hire the Joker in the Dark Knight, you know what I mean? Like, you know, do you remember what,
that's a great
Alfred
analogy.
Says? Yeah. Alfred, you know, he was,
some
you
men
know, they were desperate.
Just
so they
watched the world burn.
Right, but when he's talking about the gangster specifically, Alfred says, you know, they were desperate, so they turned to something they didn't quite understand for help, right? And you know, this isn't quite that terrible. That's the situation, but that's kind of what happens is you're not willing to give up, but you don't have any legitimate options left, so you start turning over leaves that you wouldn't normally. And these guys come out of the woodwork, and they may actually get something. Done. They might find something over a table they kick over. So, you know,
or they might set fire to a giant pile of money.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or, guys, they might find Christian clairvoyant, empathetic, psychic medium, and psychic detective and lover of chicken, ooh. Troy Griffin.
And yeah, this bring guy's him, a piece of work.
They brought Troy Griffin. To one spot. And luckily, thank God, they brought him to the exact spot where Don Lewis was murdered and where someone ate a bunch of chicken. And he had been talking about chicken all day. Do you remember? Do you remember? Did you see that over there?
Yeah.
Did you see that? Do you remember how I was talking about chicken? That's right. Your dad's dead.
Now, to be fair, we see him being brought to one location. So he could have been brought to 18 locations, but it is weird that, okay. So two things, it's super weird that the family, but at this point, yes, desperate is willing to say, should we just try a psychic? You guys want to try it? Let's go to the fair. We'll find a psychic. We'll use them. But also he says he has a history of results. He doesn't really go down his resume, but he does claim to have results in his past.
She, one of the daughters, I forget her name, was the one who actively searched for him picked him from among the crop. She decided that this was the guy. Yeah. And so, like I said, what a
look. You know, I don't mean to get. I'm not going to get sexist here, but
go on. I mean, only women can be psychics. Is that what you're going to say?
No, only three middle-aged and older women would take the step of hiring a psychic.
Into this. Are you saying Troy? The demographic for hiring Troy Griffin might be similar to our podcast listeners?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
He was not trained for this, which I was shocked to learn.
Hey, you're born with that kind of talent. He did say that he had
no formal training in being a Christian clairvoyant.
Well, that's because no formal training exists.
Yeah,
exactly. It's not his fault.
Did you guys hear that noise?
Uh-huh.
Did.
Season's greetings from your friends at JB's Personal Massage Warehouse, home of the new holiday craze taking the world by storm, Troll in the Hole. Troll in the Hole is a new fun-filled Christmas. Troll in the Hole is a new and fun-filled Christmas tradition brought to you by your friends at JB's Personal Warehouse in partnership with the North Pole. It has captured the hearts and holiday spirit of couples all over Southern Ontario. Each morning, the holiday troll in the hole finds himself in a fun new pose or place.
Oh my goodness.
Ooh, not feeling creative? No worries. We have a whole list of pose ideas on our Facebook page, like Jaws of Life, Cave of Wonders, Wrong Turn at Coochville, Someone Got Into the Chocolate, Ma's Tuna Casserole, and any more. Troll in the Hole, your new favorite holiday tradition from your friends at JB's, and tell them Dan Hurt sent you. Back to you, Craig.
Hang on.
Hang on. Shit.
Who approved that copy?
Was that Santa being troll holed? Is that what that sound was?
Craig, I'm so dizzy right now.
Wow.
Holy fuck.
I've never seen an ad read like that.
No. That was one we could have used a heads up. We could have used a heads up on that one. You would have made it through a little better.
A little inside baseball. These guys never know what's coming.
It's true.
And neither will you at JB's Personal.
We assume the holes are safe.
Oh, God. Jesus. Thanks for that, Craig. You almost killed me there.
Hey, speaking of JB's, I kind of shared a couple notes with you guys this week. I had somebody reach out to me on my work email account that was claiming to be one of the CFOs at my organization. And they were trying to get me to buy gift cards, Visa gift cards. And so I had a little fun with them. I didn't know about this promotion. I would have worked it into my correspondence, but I did try to get them to purchase basically a couple JB gift cards, and they weren't interested, but I think that's on them. That's their loss. That's their loss ultimately.
They did want those Visas you told them you had though.
Yeah, no, I had purchased two, in theory, $200 gift cards, but yeah. And luckily, my IT department did confirm that was a phishing attempt for me afterwards. Yeah, so that was unfortunate.
Did they have any questions about the personal massage warehouse?
No.
Your IT department?
No, not yet.
They checked your correspondence out?
I'm kind of working a word-of-mouth campaign before JB's at work, you know.
I don't even know where to go from.
Entirely true. Okay, so we have this psychic, we have an internet detective. Like I do feel as though they're grasping at straws a titch on this program.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
agreed.
So, what were the big revelations? In episode 3, Bounty Hunter. What did we get? We know that Carol's alive. We know that the night in question of Don's disappearance, that Kenny does not have his shit together. But there was a pile of guns that he seemed to have got his hands on that was given to him by Carol. Carol's wandering around in the middle at 3 a.m. 3 a.m. She's wandering around looking for tiger milk and runs into her brother. Luckily, like this is one of those two things can be true at once. Maybe he got the hell out of Dodge and they tried something super shifty. Like maybe they tried to kill him.
Could you imagine a scenario where maybe Carol found out he was dead I mean, I can't really understand. Is there a possibility that he dies? But how would she find out? And I when I first thought this, I thought, well, there was no way. But then you do hear about trips she made with him. So she was where he was at. She would show up randomly too on separate trips. So it's possible she had contacts there, and maybe she heard that he had died, but she immediately, her next thought was, oh shit, the will and the money's not straight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe her panicked night was about getting her brother involved and setting and getting this plan in motion to make sure she inherited what she felt she was entitled to.
Yes. Yeah.
But even wasn't if she officially
was not the one who
so I can see a scenario where
whatever it was, yeah.
Where she hears the news but can't report it because she needs that time. She immediately realizes she's screwed if she doesn't fix all that first, right?
I like that.
So yeah, so that's just kind of an angle I had, but
I mean, that
kind of
makes
this
the most sense though.
Yeah.
Cause it doesn't seem, cause if he went to Costa Rica, I don't think he came back. And unless she sent a hitman to Costa Rica to kill him,
yeah,
she didn't kill him directly. Right. So,
and because she's been there, that possibility of her having contacts there as well exists. And perhaps it got back to her, you know, the map, there's one or two people out there that know that he was dead and she got a call or she got notification. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say, it's hard to know how that would happen without the authorities knowing about it. But I mean, you gotta account for what the hell happened that night, because she was off the rails, obviously. It's too much of a coincidence that it happened to be the night that he goes. So,
well, but if it's okay, that's the problem though. It's the night that he disappears.
Right.
So he can't be dead. So how did like that? It's so weird. And maybe, well, if you're still, you know, unclear about this, obviously episodes 4 and 5 somehow don't answer this question. But it's like, I don't know. Yeah. Why is she so cagey when he's in Costa Rica?
Yeah. I mean, it's gotta be something, it could be something bordering on criminal that she was trying to get out of that.
Yeah.
Eventually led to her lying to authorities, which is its own problem. And it just snowballed into where she's at now, where now everyone thinks she's, well, not everyone, Craig is the exception, but most people think she's at least partially responsible for a man's death. Yeah. But, you know, she's dug too deep now. She comes out and says, you know, whatever. And I mean, obviously there is some explanations required for how his holdings got sorted out after he was officially missing. So,
well, so there's that one gal, and I'm blanking on her name, that kind of older gal though, that was a volunteer that worked with Carol a little bit, that said that, and you know, it's difficult because people say stuff all the time, right? They say things that are awful and nice, and sometimes none of them are right or true or, you know, sincere. But she says that Carol makes this remark to her that she'll never leave Don because she doesn't want half of it. She wants all of it. That's right. And you know, that seems like something that someone could say for sure. And if that was the thing that caused all those signatures to look like the very same signature, well, then yeah, I could see why she would be cagey about it.
You know, that takes some true mental gymnastics. If you can get through that line of thinking and still think you're a good person at the end of it, like I can see her thinking she deserves 60% of it. I can, but man, does it take some effort to at the end of a marriage say I deserve 100% of all of this?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Because you know what? Knowing and what we've been presented with, Don's experience in Costa Rica, he prefers younger ladies, you know, preferably like around 15 years old, seems like. But I can see a world where Carol like gets, maybe she's already like not impressed with Don for whatever reason. Maybe she's in it for the cats. She doesn't actually have an emotional attachment. And then she finds out that he's fooling around on her with like super uncool situations. Maybe she's like, yeah, fuck this jerk. He's a piece of garbage. It's mine. I deserve it. Like I can see it wouldn't take much for the right person in the right circumstances to think they should have that thing. Or at the very least, somebody else shouldn't have it.
All right. Well, look out your wife, just in case.
She's unnoticed, don't worry.
There was one last thing that I wanted to drop in from this last episode, from episode 3.
Drop it like it's hot.
As though it were at an elevated temperature. Yes, I will do so. The end of bounty hunting, we get to see Glover. What's his name?
Alan Glover.
Alan Glover insinuate that he's got some truth left to tell as far as his relationship goes and this whole framing of Joe Exotic.
Yeah, so I mean, this is where the direction of the show is going now. You're not going to see too much more of what we've already seen. It's going to change gears. Yeah.
So yeah, they've done a good job with leaving the cliffhanger, the old Netflix cliffhanger, and I'm excited to see what happens on these episode 4 and 5. See where this thing wraps up, but I don't really have much else to add about 2 or 3 at this point. I feel like we've covered everything I was thinking about. What do you guys got?
All right.
Here, let's GTFO, friends. Oh, this episode is written and produced by Ty Roberts.
I was just kidding. We can if you want. I just thought it'd be funny. So all right. See you later.
Well, I'm going to don a do-rag in just a second and do an impression.
But I have to say, like, I know we've been talking about checking in with stuff, but I don't want to do it for the sake of doing it because I had a week from hell and I didn't do anything fun to talk about at all. But I will say this, though. I've been writing down what's coming in December, and maybe I can just share that because I sat down this afternoon and said, there's a lot of cool stuff coming out that I want to see this month. And that I think other people would want. On the 16th, the MacGruber series is going to be out there. So I'm excited about that. That's 8 episodes dropped all in one day. On the 17th, the Jeremy Clarkson, Richard Hammond, and James May are doing another grand tour special on Amazon Prime. I love those. And
are big fans of those, huh?
Yeah. If you guys ever watched, if anyone in the audience ever watched Top Gear, this is the show they do now. So if it's on Amazon. And so there'll be one around Christmas, which is a tradition. They always had something around Christmas on the BBC back in the day. And then on the 23rd, the Matrix sequel comes out. It's a cool month for the kind of stuff we, you know, find ourselves talking about, I think.
This Matrix movie is either going to be amazing or it's going to be CW Matrix. I can't figure out which one it's going to be, but it's going to be one extreme or the other.
Yeah, we're gluttons for punishment. I don't hold out much hope at all, but you know, I'm going to watch it.
Ty, I still have not watched the last Dune movie, the recent one.
Mm-hmm. There's no rush, you know what I mean? Because if I could hold my patience at all, I would have gone back in time and said, "Hey, just wait until the second one is down the pipe." Yeah, and it's okay. You could tell it's just it they tried to make it self-contained, but the effort wasn't really there. I mean, they know they put part one in the first 2 seconds of Dune, so you know it is what it is. You're going to be wanting part two as soon as you're done part one. So if you can wait, just wait. There's no point in banging it out when you have to wait 2 years for the sequel to come.
Dan, anything you're looking forward to? I guess maybe we'll do this instead of what have we been watching. Anything you're looking forward to that's coming down the
pipe? I was prepared for the other one.
Okay, what's the other one then?
No, hang on. I was looking forward to, if we were to ask this question a week and a half ago, was looking forward to The Wheel of Time coming out on Amazon Prime.
Ah, yes.
And it did. And it did.
I'm
on the bubble. So here's the thing. They're doing kind of appointment viewing on this. I think they released the first 3 episodes and then they're doing one weekly, which I think I actually do like the idea of. And it's not appointment viewing. It's not like you have to watch it at 8 p.m. on Thursdays. You know, they just release an episode every Friday or something. And I had read, I think 4 or 5 books in the Wheel of Time series as a younger nerd. And written by Robert Jordan. Interesting books. And there's 2 things that are notable in this that are, well, one of them's more of like a current day Hollywood casting sensibility thing. And I think I realize why it bothers me. But the other one is more, Well, it actually has to do with current day Hollywood casting sensibilities. And so in the book, there's this really interesting thing about some women. So there's like this, I don't want to say witch, let's say sorceress. There's like a, it's a fantasy in a fictional world. And there's creatures and there's sorcerers and that sort of stuff. But the idea is that there's a small, small number of men that seem to have this magical gift. But the problem is they are likely going to destroy the world. And that's why it's called the Wheel of Time. It goes through a cycle of these men kind of coming back, destroying the world, and it starts again, right? It's weird, right? But that's it's a story. And then there's this kind of don't say brand, it's not a brand, but there's this selection, I don't know, of women that are given this kind of magical gift and they try to help the world. Everything makes sense in the book, and it was a good book. And I thought, when I heard it was coming out, I thought, wow, this is interesting, because I know that they're always trying to kind of encourage content that is not just white dudes. I mean, just to put a label on it, right? Like something that's not just white dudes. And that's, this book really allows for that. And I thought, wow, this is a thing that was really well written. It's a big universe, and there's opportunity here for it to be done really well and for everybody to kind of get the thing that they want. And I don't want to get out over my skis here, because I can't remember all the details from when I read the book, but there was a very clear line, because there's this yin and yang sort of element where only a small, like literally like five men in any era have this one sort of ability. But then there's a lot of women that have kind of a lower power, but they're a lot more organized, and there's kind of groups and different disciplines. But of those, the five men that kind of do things, it immediately says in like the, almost the introductory voiceover, men, and women can do this. It's like, well, hang on a goddamn second. There's like one delineating line in the entire story that really follows that yin and yang element that kind of like fits, and it feels kind of okay. And nobody's saying anybody's better than the other one. It's not a hierarchy thing. It's just, it's fucking, I don't know. It's a fantasy story.
Well, you kind of said that the men could do it better, and there's a lot of women that could do it, but they weren't quite as powerful. That's almost exactly what you said.
Don't put words in my mouth, Craig.
It's almost exactly what you said.
But I mean, those four or five men don't represent, they can't represent men. They're just four or five individuals.
That's exactly right. They don't represent men. They just represent this idea. But that's the whole thing of the story, right? Like there's this man that comes back occasionally, kind of ruins shit. Yeah. So anyways.
I only know one other person who watches this, a gentleman who I work with, lives in Winnipeg. And he was actually just talking to me about this today, because he asks every now and again, you know, what are you watching? We have the same conversation.
Do you guys record it? Do you guys have a podcast?
Yeah, actually we do. we only release it within the company though.
Okay.
We're allowed to say frequently as we want to.
God, that's twice in one episode.
1758.
And so he had told me that he's aware of the fact that this show is not being widely as well received as everyone had hoped. And he specifically told me that the people, because he enjoys this on a level where he'll hop onto like a subreddit and read, you know, what people are saying about it. And he has kind of that extra level of interest where he'll go and read what people are saying.
He's into it, yeah.
He's into it. Even though he is not someone who has read the books. And his general impression that he gave to me before we've had this conversation is that the people who don't like this are the people who read the books.
That sounds
right. And the other people are generally enjoying it. Yeah. And they would not have, even from, like you're saying, that introductory rundown, they handed you something right off the bat where like, hey, this isn't what you were expecting. Yeah. And you get that whether it's Lord of the Rings or whatever it is. Anybody I know who watches something that came from literature and was turned into television, they never like it as much. All of my Game of Thrones friends who read the books, oh, you got to read the books, they're so much better. Yeah. They show so much more about this. I get that. That's the thing that is bothering you seemed like, it doesn't quite make sense why the decision was made other than representation, which is
that's
hot button topic, obviously.
Well, it is.
And sometimes it can be abused.
Yeah. But so, you know what? That's why I thought this show was such a good idea because the books, mm-hmm. like women play such a massive role in the books. And I thought, well, shit, everybody kind of wins in this scenario. Yeah. And, you know, it's like women are completely equal and in some cases better. It's like, oh, for fuck's sakes, I get it. I get it, guys. I get it.
What's bothersome about this shit is there are plenty of times where representation is there, but it just feels natural because it wasn't written with that as a top priority. It's written in service of a story first.
That's the
representation's
book.
There and you don't feel it, right?
Yep.
But there are, and you mentioned the CW because that is a perfect example. When everyone walks onto the set on a CW show, that is two or three levels higher than the story in their list of priorities. It's that, special effects, and three other fucking things nobody cares about. And the story is like way the fuck down at the bottom to the point of absurdity. Like, you know, it's just, and you feel that when you watch it, unless you're an idiot. So, I mean, that's the problem.
Idiots are properly represented though. So,
if like, if you're a moron, you watch these shows happening and, oh, look, the Flash is running. Okay. The Flash has to run back. No, he's going forward in time. Now he's going backward in time. Hey, that's the guy you saw last season. And all this shit's happening like you're on a fucking merry-go-round and but you don't have time to even answer a question you ask yourself about something that's flying by you because they put something else in your face right away. That's not a fucking story. So
it's the Tiger King.
You're on the representation carousel and it's going 40 times faster than it's supposed to and there's no fucking story there. That's why people complain about that shit. It's because we don't even care or notice if the story's up there with it or even a little higher than representation. If it all makes sense, it's a good story and there's an arc and there's a beginning and a middle and end and you learn something, or that's all good. If it's the other shit first and then very often a bunch of other shit after that, and then the story's in the back seat, nobody cares. Your show sucks. You can do whatever the fuck you want, but you're writing a show for the headline on the New York Times, it says, oh, Batwoman's black now. And everything else is secondary to that. That's the kind of shit that, you know, this is why these shows fail, because they are written by fucking idiots. You know, it's a hard truth. And this may be our last episode, but whatever.
I think next week, everyone should tune in while the three white dudes discuss critical race theory.
Okay, maybe I'll save my second criticism for after
hours. Oh my god,
it's good. I feel like it's well founded, but maybe not well received. So, we'll see how it goes. So, that's it for me, I guess. I'm watching. Nice. I am watching it, and I think here's the thing. So they're doing this weekly release thing, and I think with that weekly release cadence, you can kind of forget the parts that annoy you. And you're like, okay, let's just see how the story goes this week. Mm-hmm. Cause there's some characters that I thought they really did well on. And then others that I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
I mentioned it last episode that we've been watching the new season of Dexter and we are two or three additional episodes into it at this point.
Yeah.
And it's been good.
Nice.
It's got a couple plot holes and
you're
like, oh, I guess they never noticed that, you know, so-and-so did that right in front of everybody and nobody really paid attention. Or, you know, there's a particular part where, and this won't spoil anything, in a Dexter season, believe it or not, at one point or another, there is a dead body. They are searching for that body and they set up the base camp for this wide search at the place where the body is buried. They bring in all of these search dogs and all this other stuff. They never smell a thing. It's all fine. It's just that is a 100% plot point, plot hole that exists in this season of Dexter that they just breezed right past.
I'm sure search find dogs out are in brought, the next episode that they switched out the dogs.
Oh, man.
You know, I feel like this is an echo of the reality TV era. Like there seems to be just and maybe this is just us getting older. I don't know what it is. And you know, when we were younger, TV kind of made sense more, but maybe we didn't care as much or weren't as smart or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it seems like things aren't as put together as they probably should be. There's got to be a reason for that, right?
and the millions of dollars.
It's so easy for them now to paint some bullshit CG onto a screen, or the money that goes into these shows is so much now that, and it's all spent on sets or a big cast or this feeling of like a movie quality production, but at the expense of writing, for sure.
Writing is last. Here's my understanding on how these things work. You come up with a concept, you present it, it either gets turned down or bought. And if it gets bought, they tell you, okay, we're going to give you $15 million. You're going to start shooting in 3 months. You better write all those scripts.
Yeah. So,
right? It's literally the last thing.
But yeah, but if you go back to Dan's era where he was talking to me, you know, this didn't used to be like this. It's because they only had that. They had nothing else. And still, a lot of times there were shitty shows. They'll get us wrong. there was a lot of bad writing then too, but there was enough good writing where you could reliably sit down every weeknight and turn on a good show.
Hardcastle
and it wasn't difficult. It's almost fucking impossible now. It's almost impossible. Like, I'm surfing through. I'm desperate. I'm looking around. There's nothing. It's all shit. And you can tell it's shit within 5 minutes of watching it. It's fucking terrible. Sorry, man. I'm a little.
Well, sometimes the things. Yeah, but sometimes the things that aren't shit, all of a sudden, season 2.5 turn to shit.
Heroes. 90% of the time. 90% of the time. Here's another one. Like, there's a lot of guys out there. This Alex Kurtzman guy gets a lot of play. You know who that is? Alex Kurtzman. So I just found out this guy's name. I think he's involved in Lost. He's tied to JJ. He's tied to the Star Treks. He's all over the fucking place. He's got a trail of garbage writing behind him. I don't know how this guy gets hired. He sometimes write the beginning of a story that's good. And that's it. Like, that's all he's capable of doing. It's all he's ever been capable of doing. He never did any better than that ever in his career. And he's got you go in his IMDb and it's just a pile of shit that this guy, and he keeps getting hired. This is the guy, like, let's get Alex on the phone. Like, and none of his stories are good. And there's a ton of people out there talking about how shit he is at this job. And he gets hired all the fucking time. I don't know what's going on out there. I really don't. Like,
I think we just need to start writing TV shows, guys.
I'm not saying it's not difficult. It's just, you know, it's difficult. We know that. But, you know, the talent was there before. You got to either give them more time or take it more seriously or something. Like, it's just,
I feel like every show is just written to try to get a flash. Like, you want to have a hot season and then just try to ride that out for a while. But if you can write one good season, that's really all most places are going for. Hey, if we can get hot, catch an Emmy, and then we can ride that for about four more seasons.
Tracy was watching something that I guess has gotten re-picked up, and Netflix is going to finish it off, or maybe it was Prime that was going to finish it off. But it has something to do with a bunch of people on a plane disappearing.
The 100, I think it's called.
And then coming back.
Manifest. You know?
Manifest, thank you.
Yes, that's the one.
And I've watched a few episodes of this show with her. Interesting premise, good start. Clearly, they had no idea where it was going to go after season one. Zero idea. And now we watched some of the end of it. It's off the fucking rails. It's mental. It's just, you know, goddamn. Go in with a plan, man. Go in with some kind of plan.
The Lost formula of every episode, ask two questions, but only answer one. And then by the end of the show, you've just got this fucking mountain of unanswered questions.
Yeah. And then the network says, you got 5 episodes to wrap this up.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Bring in another smoke monster. Just bring it in. Bring the same guys back.
Well, the Lost concept was, they were like, oh, it's like Castaway, but the island is a character. And they're like, oh, the island is a character. Okay.
Kind of a schizophrenic.
And so they came up with this, with the smoke monster.
Yeah. Well, I'm the guy in the meeting who would raise his hand and say, I'd raise my hand in the meeting and go, what does that mean?
No, but 8 other people already raised their hand and said, we will give you more money than anyone has ever given a TV show.
Yeah. I guess there needs to be more of us raising our hand earlier in the sad meeting.
All right, Craig, we're going to give these a spin.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't want that thing. Hang on. Now I'm
all right, guys.
Tech support. No, hang on, hang on. Not
oh,
yet.
Oh, Dan's got something. Dan's got jokes. This week, the CB. Yeah, I'll do the joke. Okay, so this is our Norm MacDonald tribute jokes. Once again, Ty and I are unprepared. Ty, we have to remember this for next time. Dan's got jokes.
I just like this being Dan's segment.
This
week, they're not good. They're not good.
No, I already, I'm 4 words in. I've already seen CBC, and I could already tell you this was Dan's joke.
Buckle up. This is how writing is done, everybody.
Yeah, this week, the CBC, this is a fucking Babylon Bee article again already. I can tell it's so long.
What do you want from me?
This I'll week, the CBC, Canada's most trusted news source, posted an that's the joke already, posted an article called Words and Phrases You May Want to Think Twice About Using. The article highlights some commonly used terms that are steeped in racism, ableism, and patriarchy. It suggests to avoid the use of words like spooky, tribe, and brainstorm. The explanation for some words was obvious, while others were a bit thin. For no less than 3 of the verboten, well done, words, the only explanation for not using it anymore given was a line that read, "If the reason why this is a bad word isn't obvious to you, then frankly, you are a racist." Strangely, the word oh, there you go. You're going to want to tag that one again. Is still acceptable at the CBC, though it's not acceptable on the Corn Tigers airwaves. That's 3 in an episode.
Wow. Yeah, is and none of them meta? Are acceptable.
Is that technically a meta? I think it is, yeah.
I would love to hear listeners guess what it is I'm actually saying.
That's
it did slip by one.
There
is an instance of you saying the word.
Okay.
The episode after the first time you said it, I believe, is okay, where you can find it.
All right, Ty, are you ready for one?
No, sure, why not?
And I practically wrote these during the episode, so the proofreading might not be there, so I apologize, everybody.
Oh, my God.
CNN.
Yeah. Shocking.
I love these jokes.
Oh, my God.
This week, CNN, often referred as America's CBC, made all the punchlines are at the beginning of the joke. Made a significant move by suspending primetime anchor Chris Cuomo for abusing his position as a trusted anchor to bend and possibly break ethical boundaries to support his brother's defense against sexual assault charges. In spite of the suspension, CNN still said that they are supporting his choice to support family in spite of breaking ethical journalistic standards. In related news, CNN has made a policy decision to shift from a journalistic entity to a content creator platform to avoid the public requirement to report actual news.
What the
okay, maybe this is no longer a segment.
Again, Craig, these...
Dan's mug club submissions.
These are excellent. You should be...
No, it's cool. I know
they didn't
want to
be clowns,
like
they shouldn't put on the makeup.
No, I know. I know that you guys don't like Stephen Colbert, and you know a lot of those guys who spend most of their time doing political jokes.
Why are you bringing up Stephen Colbert? Like
oh, I don't know, because you're just doing Stephen Colbert ad libs and changing it to the
next. No. These are jokes, though, Craig.
He hasn't done one of those in years.
Yeah, these Stephen Colbert guys. Just whines. I heard Kimmel the other day on a expletive-laced rant that had no jokes in it at all. It was just him getting pissed off. That was the opening of the show. He was mad that people were upset with Fauci for gassing puppies or something.
Oh boy.
Anyway,
you've watched Kimmel more recently than I have.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for enduring this episode. Thank you to JB's, of course. Good luck with the troll in the hole guest, our gift this year. This is produced, written, and edited by Ty Roberts, Craig LaPorte, and myself. And in our own stunning move last week, I think Craig was promoted to Best Boy Grep. So kudos to him.
I missed it.
Much appreciation for that. Yeah, no, that
thanks,
happened.
Guys.
You weren't at that meeting, but it happened. Music from filmmusic.io, written by Kevin MacLeod. Sound effects are from Zapsplat, if and when we use them.
Xmas in the House by Frank Schroeder at filmmusic.io as well.
Oh, nice. Very good. Okay. Frank Schroeder, you said?
That's correct, sir.
Very good. Frank Schroeder. Yeah. So what did I say? The Corn Tigers on Instagram and thecorntigers@gmail.com. Send us a note. Send us a complaint. Yeah, send us something.
No one can spell our name.
The Corn Tigers? It's T-H-E.
That's what's happening.
It's the traditional spelling. All right.
May you all get trolls in your holes.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.
Carol Baskin killed her husband, whacked him. Can't convince me that it didn't happen. Fed him to tigers, they snacking. What's happening? Carol Baskin killed her husband, whacked him. Can't convince me that it didn't happen. Fed him to tigers, they snacking. What's happening? Carol Baskin killed her husband, whacked him. Can't convince me that it didn't happen. Fed them to tigers, they snackin'.